WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. California Governor Gavin Newsom calling the large-scale immigration raid on a farm in Central California inhumane. ABC's Aaron Kapturski explains what happened.
A dramatic scene northwest of Los Angeles. Protesters clashing with masked federal agents conducting immigration raids at a cannabis farm in Ventura County. Crowds quickly gathering, federal agents setting off smoke canisters and irritants to disperse them. Dozens of men lined against the wall, heavily armed agents standing guard. At least one person is seen kneeling on the ground, seemingly under arrest.
A New Hampshire judge pausing the birthright citizenship executive order, allowing class action lawsuit on behalf of everyone born in the U.S. after February 20th to proceed, the date on the order. The case almost certainly headed back to the U.S. Supreme Court. President Trump will visit flood-ravaged Central Texas today, where the agonizing search for the more than 160 people still missing goes on. The death toll from the July 4th flooding now hitting 121. This is ABC News.
As Wisconsin is summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Mariska Hargitay has experienced an almost unprecedented run as an actor on the show Law & Order Special Victims Unit. And now she has a director's credit as well. She is the creative force behind a documentary about her late mother, Jane Mansfield, called My Mom Jane. The Hollywood Reporter is now saying the documentary will be eligible for the Oscars since it's been revealed that it had a short theatrical run at a North Hollywood movie theater last week. My Mom Jane is available to stream on HBO and is getting very good reviews. Sarah Jessica Parker feels she had to defend herself for not endorsing a political candidate publicly. The And Just Like That and Sex and the City star told Nicole Wallace on her podcast she didn't believe social media was the place for quick political conversations. To her credit, Parker says she's not going to go into an argument unless she is totally educated on an issue. Imagine that. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
A buzzer beater for the Bucks. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports basketball. The NBA Summer League kicked off last night in Las Vegas. Teams getting a look at some of their youngest players. Milwaukee against Denver, down by two. Andre Jackson Jr. with a pass to the Bucks' Jamari Bouye, who moved to the right behind the three-point line on ESPN.
Jackson to inbound. He finds Bouye. Liddell all over him, the step over. He gets it up.
The Bucks over the Nuggets, 90-89. GM John Horst and Doc Rivers to introduce Miles Turner to the media, picked up in free agency from the Pacers. Baseball tonight in Milwaukee, the Brewers against the last place Nationals. The crew now just two games behind the Cubs, who beat the Twins yesterday 8-1, avoiding the sweep in Minnesota. Pete Crow Armstrong with two home runs, and former Brewer pitcher Colin Ray allowing just one run in seven innings. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
I get why you, Senator Royce, were a no vote on this budget. I think the people that voted no on this were standing up for public education.
I think that's exactly right. We heard from people loud and clear in this budget cycle and 2 years ago, the number one priority that people asked for, whether they called, emailed, or showed up at the public hearings, they want our schools funded. Our kids deserve better schools. They have been underfunded for decades, and it is time for us to prioritize public education.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station, and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, doing some recombobulating, an extended session with Dan Schaefer, who joins us at 9:30. I hope you can join us.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. As Wisconsin is summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
We have a chance for a few scattered showers and thunderstorms today, otherwise mostly cloudy with a high right around 82 this afternoon. Tonight, thunderstorms likely, low in the mid-60s. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, scattered thunderstorms early on, a little clearing in the afternoon with a high right around 79. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it is 66.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety. CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers through CPR education and access to AEDs. Nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
Pete Schwabba. Friday's show is a replay, but I'll be back live Monday with the group On Stage for Cancer performing in studio, and Madison film critic Rob Thomas talks movies. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Get up and at 'em. It is a Friday. Welcome to it. Fabulous Farm Bay Pam Yankee. This is the Midwest Farm Report. Oh, we've got plenty of ground to cover this morning. Not only your weather for the weekend, but also a reminder, county fair activities galore all around the state of Wisconsin for you to tap into. And we're talking this morning about the shortage that rural Wisconsin is facing when it comes to some of our critical services. You know, there are places in Wisconsin where if you call 911 and needed an EMT or an ambulance, you could expect as much as a 45-minute to an hour wait. That is how sparse that group of trained professionals is in rural Wisconsin. Why? Because they rely largely on volunteers. And let's just face it, there are not a lot of people in rural communities and not a lot of people in rural communities that have extra time or the enthusiasm to volunteer. Stephanie Hoff's taking a little deeper dive on that subject for us as we roll our way through the morning. So let's talk about that county fair weather that we can encounter today into the weekend. Now, there is a chance of rain in the forecast. Cannot deny that. But for the most part today, we should see sunny skies. Going to get a little on the warm side, as a matter of fact. 87 are expected high. But remember, there is a chance of showers, maybe even a thunderstorm. So your rainfall reporters, be ready to react. Then tonight, more showers overnight. Saturday, maybe a chance of rain, probably after about 10 o'clock. Otherwise, sunny on Saturday, 82. Sunday, sunny, looks dry right now, 82. And then Monday, we're back into the upper 80s for the front part of the week. Stu Muckrag, meteorologist, on the way in about 15 minutes, giving you those details. Details is exactly what it's about when it comes to the state budget. This year was kind of an interesting dialogue down at the state capitol. Not only are we kind of divided pretty much equally, Democrats versus Republicans trying to craft a state budget. But this year, according to Wisconsin Senator Pat Testin, who chairs the Senate Agriculture and Revenue Committee, things were a little bit different. While they were working on the state budget in one room, they also had to keep an eye on what was happening in Washington, D.C. with federal funding bound into the big, beautiful bill. I had a chance to visit with Testin and asked him to tell me a little bit more about the behind-the-scenes dynamics that you might not have been aware of.
What was sort of unique about this process and being the co-vice chair of the Finance Committee, when we would be in negotiations within co-chair, so myself, Senator Markline, co-chair Representative Mark Bourne, and co-vice chair Representative Kurtz, at the same time as we were in negotiations between two houses, there were other negotiations going on elsewhere in the Capitol between Leader Lemieux, Speaker Voss, and the governor. And so it was sort of this, it was a weird dance to say the least, but even up until the last minute, we were still going back and forth in conversations to finally get a final product done. And even the physical process of getting this budget across the finish line and signed into law as quickly as it did. So typically when we exec the budget out of the Joint Finance Committee, usually we leave it up to Reference Bureau and Fiscal Bureau to put all of our actions into legalese into the final document. And typically that takes 3 to 4 days, but everyone was working around the clock because there were several provisions of how our budget interacted with what was going on out in Washington, D.C. as part of the big, beautiful bill that we really had to move quickly. And so this was certainly a unique budget, you know, having it go alongside the same timeline as the big, beautiful bill to get signed into law so we wouldn't miss out on some federal funds as it relates to our Medicaid budget. But, you know, overall, there was a lot of give and take in this budget. There's a lot to be thankful for that we got accomplished. And certainly, you know, there were some things that, you know, I wasn't necessarily thrilled about in this budget. But at the end of the day, with the divided government, you know, there is going to be that give and take and compromise. And so I think we were able to show that we are still able to deliver. And when you take a look at a number of the investments that we made, particularly for our ag community and coalition, there's a lot to be had there, and really thankful that we got this budget done. And I'm just relieved that I don't have to be a prisoner of Madison 5 to 6 days a week and get to take a little bit of a breather now before we pick things back up here in the fall.
Boy, absolutely. Again, Wisconsin Senator Pat Tested along with us. Now, let's talk about that. One of the major items that you had been working on from the very beginning was the Agriculture Road Improvement Program, ARIP. I know that that was under the Department of Transportation's oversight, and you got it across the finish line. Maybe not necessarily with any more money, but at least nothing that was less, right, Pat?
Yeah. Yep, we continued the Agricultural Road Improvement Program again in this budget to the tune of $150 million. So making sure that money is going back to our farm-to-market roads to build up our infrastructure. And then also, a part of that, what was different this go-around compared to the last budget is that we dedicated roughly 20% of that $150 million, which is going to go for the small bridge and culverts that are less than 20 feet. So last budget, we set aside money for every township and county to basically go through and do a bridge inventory to see just, you know, where things are at. Because in some instances, you know, we've had these small structures basically get devastated by heavy equipment going across them. And certainly it's a safety concern. So I think we're in a really good spot on that front to continue this program. And it just shows that even going into the last budget, of the $150 million that we set aside for the ARIP program, we had roughly $500 million in requests. So that goes to show that there is still a lot more work that needs to be done, and really glad that we're able to continue this program with a few tweaks moving forward. And it's going to go a long way to helping every corner of the state. I know in my Senate district, of the last pot of $150 million, we had roughly about a couple dozen projects that were enumerated and fixed. And so I'm hoping we'll continue that trend moving forward, and just goes to show the value of making sure that our infrastructure is really front and center here. And overall, our entire transportation budget, I was actually really pleased with, because we actually invested more money in the roads than what the governor had proposed. We didn't bond as much as what the governor proposed. So using one-time cash to fund our infrastructure projects. So, you know, essentially not having to put that on the state credit card is a is, I think, a financially prudent position that we took, and glad we made the investments that we did into our transportation budget.
You know, every time a program is created, especially if it's to help with infrastructure, it seems like the monies are outstripped by the volume of grants. That goes for our dairy processing grants, our meat processor grants. They stay intact this time around, too.
Yes, they do. So, again, building upon the investments of previous budgets, you know, we invested an additional $1.2 million into our dairy processing grant programs, an additional $1.6 million in our meat processor grants. So, again, helping our food supply chain, and more importantly, finding ways to create new avenues for markets and products to help our farmers here in the state export more goods. And that's really what has set us apart compared to other states here in the country. And really, when you have, when I have conversations with Secretary Romanski, this is one thing that he has said over and over again, has set us apart from some of his counterparts in other states. And thankfully, he hasn't given them the secret sauce or the recipe that we've been able to adopt here in Wisconsin. But it really sets us apart and gives us a leg up as far as competition goes to ensure that we're best positioned in Wisconsin farmers and our products compared to other states, not just in the Midwest, but around the country.
One item that I'm curious about, this food security grant program. There's been so much anxiety in Wisconsin over the Medicaid cuts and where Wisconsin's responsibilities will lie. Our food security network and these kinds of programs, $10 million for the food security grant program. It may sound like a lot of money, but in reality, when you look at the balancing act you guys are working with, where do you stand on that? I mean, there's going to be some gaps yet to be addressed by Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to see how things shake out at the federal level with the enactment of the Big Beautiful Bill and some of the changes that they made to SNAP benefits and FMAP and just Medicaid overall. But I think, you know, we are once again trying to position ourselves with some of the changes that may come down from the federal level. And again, it's going to take time to see how this all pans out. But you know, if there are going to be individuals who sort of maybe lose existing coverage that they have, at least here we're doing what we can to help these individuals out. And so, you know, the food security grant program, we set aside $10 million to help with our local food pantries and food banks around the state to help those individuals in need. Because roughly, as it stands right now, 1 in 5 Wisconsinites are on our Medicaid program. And, you know, that's 20% of our state. So, you know, making sure that individuals that need help, that we're doing what we can to support them and make sure they can provide for their families and put food on the table is going to go a long way to ensuring that we're taking care of those who are most in need.
Do you anticipate, are we going to need a special session? Are you anticipating that there's going to be more legislative work ahead of you, like we said, to fill those voids? There's a lot of different folks. Badger Care is one that a lot of folks in rural communities and our farm families lean on, that is also under the auspices kind of that Medicaid triangle. Are you expecting that there's going to be some special session, some unique work yet to be done in Wisconsin after we get those details?
Yeah, I mean, there's still plenty of work that needs to be done. I think right now everyone's sort of taking a breather after we just went through I can only describe as a legislative marathon where we were working around the clock. I think I spent probably 20 to 23 plus days down in Madison in the month of June, working alongside my colleagues on the Finance Committee and our staff and Fiscal Bureau to get this budget done. But one thing that I do think is critical, what we were able to get accomplished, was as it relates to the hospital assessment. So essentially every hospital here in the state of Wisconsin is taxed, and states have the ability to basically what's called a skim. Now, prior to the Big Beautiful Bill, our hospital assessment was roughly about 1.8%, and now we're able to leverage that up to 6%. So the state's going to see roughly an additional $1 billion, of which we'll be able to take 6% of that to use for Medicaid services and coverage. So again, for individuals who are low income, underinsured or uninsured, being able to use that to help fill the cost continue hole that we face in our Medicaid budget, which was $1.6 billion. And as it stands right now, we are able to fill that hole. And so I keep my fingers crossed that we don't have to come back and address that with a potential budget repair bill in the future. But, you know, I think just by some of the fiscally prudent decisions that we made in the state biennial budget, we should be in good shape.
That's Wisconsin Senator Patrick Teston, representing the 24th District, chair of the Senate Agriculture and Tourism Committee, also vice chair on that Joint Finance Committee. He does remind Wisconsinites that right now we're still sitting on a $2 billion rainy day fund just in case. More work potentially on the horizon. From the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as Ag Meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. 5 years after the fake elector scheme to overturn the 2020 election, legal accountability is grinding along for some of the conspirators and those who wittingly or unwittingly supported them. But pardons may be in the wind, too. May 27th, a 3-judge New York appellate court stripped Trump campaign attorney Kenneth Chesbrough, an alleged key organizer of the swing state fake elector scheme, of his license to practice law in New York. June 16th, the alleged mastermind of the fake elector scheme, John Eastman, was recommended for disbarment in California. He can still appeal the decision. Also June 16th, a civil jury found MyPillow CEO and election denier Mike Lindell liable for $2.3 million for defaming former Dominion Voting Systems executive Eric Coomer. Dominion itself has a claim pending against Lindell, right-leaning news outlets, and several other Trump-alleged conspirators and collaborators. The Michigan Advance reported July 5th that a hearing on whether the trial of 15 of 16 Michigan fake electors should go forward has been moved to September 9th. A trial in Arizona is scheduled for January 5th, 2026 for the alleged fake electors and Trump associates, including his former chief of staff, Mark Meadows. Mother Jones reported June 4th that President Donald Trump's pardon attorney was considering pardons for the accused fake electors. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
This is your captain. We are going to be experiencing some slight turbulence. Please fasten your... Oh, hold on. Just got a video of my cat.
Imagine the pilot of an airplane was as confident as you are texting and driving. Seems kind of crazy when you put it like that.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK. Todd Albaugh.
Next time, Todd continues live from the Northern Wisconsin State Fair in Chippewa Falls, highlighting some great public educators and talking with filmmaker B.J. Hollers about his new documentary on the amazing game Coup. Don't miss it.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt Nair on air.
Gag meteorologist along with us. I started getting pictures from people last night, especially down in like Greene County, the southern tier of states, right on the Illinois border. Trees down, power lines down. They said it felt like a straight line wind in some areas. That was one section of our audience. Then getting an update from Union Grove, 1.25 inches of rain there. But then some folks like Butch from Alto, only 0.08 of an inch. Dennis in Brownsville, 15.01 inches. Linda, just a trace in Reeseville. So a real kind of a wide-ranging impact storm that came through yesterday.
Oh, absolutely. And I can add to that with Racine, one indication at right at 0.5 inches, one at 0.6 inches. Milwaukee just still having some rain, 1.13 inches so far. And then there's Madison, Truax Field on the northeast side of town. 2.01 inches, yeah, over 2 inches there.
That's crazy. I'm on the west side, a far west side of Madison, and I was still playing fetch with the dogs yesterday when a lot of that was coming through. So it's crazy how that system came through. And if you're one of those that was impacted, please, the talk text line is open. You're also welcome to send pictures that way. 877-301-FARM. That's 877-301-3276. Is that behind us now, Stu?
Well, somewhat. I mean, this is the first front moving through. The cool front still out to the northwest, out around northwest Minnesota. And that's why we look to the indicators here. And just to our south, Rockford, northern Illinois, and to the west into eastern parts of Iowa, there's a flood watch in effect in that part of the country all the way until early Saturday morning. Not in Wisconsin, just stops at the Wisconsin border. Not like we couldn't get more of that heavy rain, especially in southern Wisconsin. That moist air is going to run along that stationary front from Nebraska, Iowa, into Illinois and help to fuel some rain in the south. The cool front drops in out of the northwest. There'll be a little more rainfall, but I expect we start to dry out for Saturday and drier and warmer for Sunday and Monday. We'll check our forecast right after this.
Lot of choices when it comes to selecting seed varieties. If you're a seed dealer, help make their choice a little easier by shining the spotlight on your products through the Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. By entering customers in the contest by the August 31st deadline, seed dealers will receive $100 for one grower, $200 for three, and $300 for five or more. Growers must complete an entry and harvest form to qualify. For more information, visit wisoybean.org.
You're invited to Clinton Farms in Bear Creek for this year's Farm Technology Days, Generations of Progress. This year's event features the chance to explore cutting-edge equipment, innovative techniques, and taking a glimpse into the next generation of agriculture. There's also a rotary parlor, seminars, and, of course, field demos of all kinds. Mark your calendars for August 5th through the 7th and bring the whole family to this year's event. For more information and show details, visit wifarmtechdays.org.
All righty, Stu, let's have that weekend forecast.
All right, well, there's rain in southern Wisconsin, of course, already raining in the far southwest and just lingering in the far southeast. And otherwise today, there'll be a little break in the clouds now and again, especially in the north, but a rain chance redevelops. Already this morning in southwest Wisconsin, toward midday or afternoon, elsewhere in the state, even late today in the far north. Temps today still pushing up there, upper 70s in the north, low 80s south, and the winds become more southeast, about 5 to 10. A little more like that chance of a shower or storm statewide tonight. Not very heavy in the north, maybe up to 0.5 inches or more in the south. Some localized heavier rains possible. We drop back in the 60s overnight. Tomorrow, still some rain chance in the morning, especially just in the morning in the north, maybe lingering toward midday in the south, and low 80s, Pam. And I expect by Sunday, sunshine, a lot of low and even mid-80s, and even upper 80s with sun on Monday. That summer steam will turn back on.
I have no doubt. Very good. Thanks, Stu. Have a great weekend. The Talk text line open to you, 877-301-FARM. Appreciate all your updates brought to you courtesy of Compure Financial on a finally Friday morning.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Yonke.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. Our broadcast lineup strives to bring you real news and great conversation throughout your day. We now take you to a recent conversation on Matinair on Air with Darren Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union.
Well, and I guess, Darren, it's almost like they want farmers to come out and say you're against SNAP, and you're not. It's not like this is something that farmers have been calling for, that we need to get rid of SNAP because it's overextending us. That's not accurate.
Yeah, you know, it's more or less coming from the right wing of the Republican Party and trying to, you know, save some tax dollars. In reality, you know, the folks that are benefiting from that program are a lot of those same folks that are voting for those right-wing candidates. And, you know, you look at where most of those dollars go, it's to more of the red states than the blue states. And how do we make sure that we're keeping those programs going in order to, you know, help the most needy?
And one of those programs I want to highlight really quick that was, I believe, got, forgive the term, dozed, but it was part of the big, you know, it happened this first quarter of the year, was the program which gave farmers money to grow food to get to pantries to give to people. So they cut a program that would allow farmers to make money to grow their food to feed those who are hungry. I mean, I don't know if there is another thing out there that you could cut that shows that they don't care about farmers and they do not care about the poor. Or the hungry. They're not mutually exclusive. When I saw that, and I think we spoke to you, I know that Pat spoke to Hans Breitenmoser about it, but it's just such a blaring example of how little they care about the actual people of this country.
Yeah, that's the LFPA program, Local Food Purchasing Assistance Program. And, you know, here in the state, it's been 189 farmers have benefited directly from that because those payments come to the farmers in the beginning of the year and make sure that they have the cash on hand to put the seeds in the ground to grow the crops that then ultimately end up in the food pantries, the tribal elders box. You know, it's all going to help the people that are in most need of a daily nutritious meal. And so getting rid of a program that's benefiting farmers directly, but also making sure that there's a system in place to help that food go 10 miles or 20 miles instead of having to travel 1,000 miles. You know, that takes a lot of those dollars directly away from the farmers, because you have all those middleman dollars that are being dispersed. And a program like the LFPA program is certainly connected to farmer.
Catch Matinair on Air live weekdays from 9 to 11 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. California Governor Gavin Newsom calling the large-scale immigration raid on a farm in Central California inhumane. ABC's Aaron Kapturski explains what happened.
A dramatic scene northwest of Los Angeles. Protesters clashing with masked federal agents conducting immigration raids at a cannabis farm in Ventura County. Crowds quickly gathering, federal agents setting off smoke canisters and irritants to disperse them. Dozens of men lined against the wall, heavily armed agents standing guard. At least one person is seen kneeling on the ground, seemingly under arrest.
A New Hampshire judge pausing the birthright citizenship executive order, allowing class action lawsuit on behalf of everyone born in the U.S. after February 20th to proceed, the date on the order. The case almost certainly headed back to the U.S. Supreme Court. President Trump will visit flood-ravaged Central Texas today, where the agonizing search for the more than 160 people still missing goes on. The death toll from the July 4th flooding now hitting 121. This is ABC News.
a buzzer beater for the Bucks. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, basketball. The NBA Summer League kicked off last night in Las Vegas. Teams getting a look at some of their youngest players. Milwaukee against Denver, down by two. Andre Jackson Jr. with a pass to the Bucks' Jamari Bouye, who moved to the right behind the three-point line on ESPN.
Jackson to inbound. He finds Bouye. Liddell all over him to step over. He gets it up.
The Bucks over the Nuggets, 90-89. GM John Horst and Doc Rivers to introduce Miles Turner to the media, picked up in free agency from the Pacers. Baseball tonight in Milwaukee, the Brewers against the last place Nationals. The crew now just two games behind the Cubs, who beat the Twins yesterday 8-1, avoiding the sweep in Minnesota. Pete Crow Armstrong with two home runs, and former Brewer pitcher Colin Ray allowing just one run in seven innings. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Friday, we'll have our regular Week in Review panel. Dr. Kristen Lierley talks about her weekend show, and Mike Clemens will preview the Brewers National Series.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9. Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
We have a chance for a few scattered showers and thunderstorms today. Otherwise, mostly cloudy with a high right around 82 this afternoon. Tonight, thunderstorms likely, low in the mid-60s. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, scattered thunderstorms early on. A little clearing in the afternoon with a high right around 79. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 65.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Stephanie Bloomingdale, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. The big Brewer bill is basically an all-out assault on working Americans.
No tax on tips. It's not as good as it sounds because a lot of tipped workers are not paying that higher level of taxes right. In the first place.
As the wealthiest among us dine at the feast of all feasts, don't be fooled by the table scraps.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. Our broadcast lineup strives to bring you real news and great conversation throughout your day. Here's a portion of a conversation recently had on the John and Gordy Show with writer Mike McCabe about the history of milk strikes in Wisconsin.
You know, a lot of people don't know about the milk strikes of 1933.
I did not know.
Not taught in school. Not something that is on very many people's radar. But
well, tell us about it.
Yeah, in the area I'm talking about, where all this started, where the milk strikes were born, is today the reddest of red areas in our country. It is a MAGA Republican stronghold today.
Yeah,
and in the late 1920s and early 1930s, this was a hotbed of progressivism.
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. And farmers had it. They weren't getting fair prices. And so they just decided, doggone it, we're going to organize. And in Abbotsford, Wisconsin, which is not far from where our farm was as I was growing up, not far from where the town where my novel is set is at, farmers came together, hundreds of farmers came together to start to organize to withhold their milk. And then not too long after that, 5,000 farmers showed up in nearby Marshfield to continue the organizing campaign. And eventually over 100,000 farmers in Wisconsin had joined the milk strike. They were dumping milk at the roadside and on railroad tracks, and they were blocking, shipment of milk to creameries, to places where it was bottled or made into cheese. They even were blowing up some cheese factories and creameries with dynamite. They were obstructing the roads, erecting blockades to prevent trucks from getting milk products to Madison and Milwaukee.
Wow.
They just decided we're going to shut everything down. There's not going to be milk or any milk products anywhere in the state of Wisconsin. This eventually spread to other dairy states across the country. And this strike got even bigger until it led to massive reform of milk pricing in what became the very first farm bill ever enacted by Congress.
Find out more about the John and Gordy Show and our entire lineup at civicmedia.us.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
You know, you can channel a lot of money towards an issue or a problem, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be solved. Welcome back to the Midwest Farm Report on a Friday. I'm Farm Director Pam Yockey. One of the real challenges that rural Wisconsin faces every day is the lack of qualified staff to man our fire departments, our emergency services, drive an ambulance for that matter. That means a lot of people in rural Wisconsin, when they dial 911, they may have to wait up to an hour for those folks to gather together, be able to get the resources where they're needed. That's alarming. And the state government has tried to do what it can, finding monies, trying to figure things out. But you know what? It's really a people power situation. Stephanie Hoff did a deeper dive on that story, and she's joining us as our Friday unfolds. So glad you're with us. I am the fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yockey on this, the 11th day of July. Little tidbits to share with you this morning. Let's see. On this day in 1914, Major League Baseball debut, Babe Ruth. Yep. George Herman Babe Ruth Jr., one of the world's most well-known professional baseball players, started his Major League Baseball career with the Boston Red Sox on this day, 1914. A couple other little tidbits. Here's one from Wisconsin. Did you know on this day in 1839, a fellow named Ebenezer Whiting from Racine was issued patent number 1232? He had an improved plow, and that was the very first patent issued to someone from Wisconsin for an improved plow. Happened on this day, 1839. Happy birthday to singer, songwriter, and more importantly, a fellow that has dated around. Richie Sambora from Bon Jovi is 65 years young today. And now you know. Time to take a trip to the field and find out how Wisconsin crops are looking and what we need to be aware of. It's all brought to you courtesy of our friends from Helena Agri, and I'm visiting with Dean Ebert. He is one of the product managers that's in the West Bend location for Helena Agri, and he's been a busy fella. Just trying to schedule this conversation with you has been a challenge. Dino, how are things looking over there?
Things are going overall quite well. I mean, our crop development really turned a corner here 30 days ago when we started getting heat. It's one of the nicer corn crops I've seen in a while. I mean, right now we're making second pass applications on soybeans. We're really ramping up to hammer this water hemp issue and giant ragweed and mare's tail using the Liberty Roundup Enlist One combos with a lot of water, looking for sunny days, high heat. Just trying to line that up to get the best control possible. And along with that, we always foliar feed those soybeans at that stage with some ENC manganese and a product called Megafol, which is a stress reducer. And the one watch out is we've had stress. I mean, these hot, hot, sunny days. When we put these herbicides and products over the top, that plant has to metabolize all that material. And Megafol is a product from Vallagro Company out of Italy that upregulates all the defense mechanisms in the plant. So we're utilizing that as much as we can to try to make sure that crop doesn't skip a beat, keeps moving to crank out bushels at the end.
And you guys are constantly monitoring things. Tissue samples really key because one field can vary quite differently from another, and that's something you manage, help growers manage through all the way.
Yeah, our AI services here work with we have a program called Whole Farm, which farmers get scouting services as well as tissue testing. We pull a consistent sample within a given 40 acres on a weekly basis throughout the summer. and we tissue test for micronutrients and actually the the macro loads of nutrients to see where the crop is really sitting. Once we have that information, we can fine tune and full your feed for almost any nutrient that may be deficient. So we're taking those samples right now. We'll be evaluating if there's something that needs to be added or tweaked if we make a fungicide pass at R2, R3 on soybeans or at tassel time on the corn. A really useful tool that's been used more and more within the last decade.
Oh, for sure, for sure. You know, the other thing that we want to be mindful of, yes, our hearts and our pocketbooks to a certain extent may be in those corn and soybean fields, but you're also quick to point out that for our dairy operators especially that are really laser-focused on alfalfa production, scouting those fields, don't let that stubble go unattended between cuttings, huh?
Well, right now, your new seeding, they get your, most guys got their peas and oats or whatever cover crop harvest put off. We've got regrowth out there. So now's the time to be really watching for weeds, annual weeds that can be cleaned up with herbicides as well as grass pressure. That can be cleaned up right now. And, of course, potato leaf hoppers. It's been kind of a hit-and-miss bug the last few years. I know there are some adult leaf hoppers out there right now. I don't think their numbers are exploding. But the cost of, you know, $2 to $3 an acre for a full load of insecticide, you can recoup your investment and really ensure that that new seeding is stress-free to keep building its top and pushing a root to really get established and hold itself together going through winter and into next year. So our scouts are watching that pretty close. We've treated a couple fields already. They're just starting to green up, and I expect there'll be a few more that we'll have to take care of.
Everything we do in agriculture requires investment. That new seeding, or maybe it is a new piece of equipment, that corn and soybean field is going to try to help pay for. The folks at Helena Agri are connected to all facets of your farm, ready to provide that information that Dean was just talking about as far as plant tissues, ready to be standing next to you in a field, whether it's scouting or taking a look at nutrient applicator patterns. They're there for you from the beginning to the end. Dean Ebert, along with us, he's one of our product managers that's in the West Bend location for Helena Agri. Want to find more good folks just like him and the services they provide? Go to HelenaAgri.com. I'm PM Yankee.
Rural Mutual Assurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
When a company only does business in Wisconsin, that's Wisconsin strong. Rural Mutual provides all lines of insurance, including commercial, farm, home, and auto. And your premiums stay right here to keep Wisconsin strong. Local agents, local underwriters, local claims adjusters.
Rural Mutual Assurance. Keeping Wisconsin strong.
You're invited to Clinton Farms in Bear Creek for this year's Farm Technology Days, Generations of Progress. This year's event features the chance to explore cutting-edge equipment, innovative techniques, and taking a glimpse into the next generation of agriculture. There's also a rotary parlor, seminars, and, of course, field demos of all kinds. Mark your calendars for August 5th through the 7th and bring the whole family to this year's event. For more information and show details, visit wifarmtechdays.org.
It looks like President Trump is trying to address an issue that Congress hasn't been willing to touch. For example, cage-free egg laws in California. Yesterday, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins said that the Trump administration is filing a lawsuit against the state of California over their intrusive actions that have caused the price of eggs in that state to skyrocket, harming consumers. According to Brooks, they said the Department of Justice filed the lawsuit yesterday against the state of California, Governor Gavin Newsom, Attorney General Rob Bonita, and the state officials over California laws that impose the red tape on production of eggs and egg products that really is what they see as a violation of the Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution. Californians, she said, are forced to buy more expensive eggs. California's actions under Proposition 12 fly in the face of federal jurisdiction and regulation over food production and safety under the Egg Products Inspection Act. They say that it's not just impacting California consumers, it is also impacting those businesses that would like to do business in California. So So we'll keep an eye on what's going on there. Don't forget, the World Ag Supply Demand Report comes out at 11 a.m. Central Time today. Markets are getting in position, although it looks like a lowered position this morning. Currently, we've got September corn down 2 at 397, December new crop down a penny at 415. The August soybeans are up a penny at 1013, November new crop unchanged at 1014. The wheat for September is down a penny right now, 553. December down a penny at 574. Yesterday in Chicago, as far as our dairy markets were concerned, the barrel cheese dropped a penny and three quarters, finished the day at 171. 40-pound block cheese was down a penny at 168 and a half, but AA butter gained 2 3/4 cents to 259 a bushel. The August Class 3 milk that goes into cheese this morning, down 2 at 1784 a hundredweight. Coming up next, we're taking a closer look at the state funding and support of our rural firefighters, our rural emergency services. It is an expensive service, but I think you would agree, one that many communities see as absolutely necessary. Stephanie Hoff's got details on the way for a Friday morning.
Can't get enough farm news? The stories you hear and more 24/7 at MidwestFarmReport.com. Stay tuned as we'll be right back.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Time for the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. The Wisconsin Supreme Court hands a big win to the environment. The court ruled it's unconstitutional for a legislative committee to block rules created by state agencies. The decision means good environmental rules now face an easier path to getting to the finish line and becoming law. For years, legislative vetoes by a handful of legislators stymied a long list of environmental protections. After more than 30 years, the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Program is going unfunded. Money for the legacy program was stripped out of the budget by the Joint Committee on Finance. The program helps preserve our state's wildlife areas and fisheries through land purchases and grants. Now that the budget has been signed, it's unclear how the vital program will continue, although there is talk of a standalone bill that would revive it. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's most pressing environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns, it's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down. Discover your path to better mental health at hazeldenbettyford.org/Wisconsin. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Stephanie Bloomingdale, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. The big Brewer bill is basically an all-out assault on working Americans.
No tax on tips. It's not as good as it sounds because a lot of tipped workers are not paying that higher level of taxes right in the first place.
As the wealthiest among us dine at the feast of all feasts, don't be fooled by the table scraps.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. Maggie Dawn.
At the top of the show, I'm joined by former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin, Jim Santel. We discuss the big takeaways from the United States Supreme Court's last term. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
At risk.
Yeah, so what we found was that just under half of the departments lack the personnel to make a fire response that involves four people and an engine. So the way that's being dealt with is that most of these departments are using mutual aid to fill that gap. And as there's less and less volunteers available, and about 80% of our fire departments in Wisconsin are staffed by volunteers or near volunteers or are paid a small amount to be part of the department, it's put a pretty significant strain on the emergency response infrastructure.
That kind of underlines the importance of volunteers, needing volunteers. Like you said, 85% operate entirely with volunteers. More than half are worried that they won't have staff.
Yes, and that's something that we've been seeing and hearing anecdotally for a long time now. I mean, going back even a couple decades, you've been hearing about the decline of the number of volunteers available to respond to calls and so on. And we saw the same thing in EMS also. We did a similar study a couple of years ago that showed that 41% of our ambulance services weren't responding to calls 24/7, 365. So what we're seeing on both sides is that the EMS system and the firefighting systems that we have in place haven't been supported and need additional support and resources to be able to respond reliably.
Yeah, the people power is one problem. The funding issue is the other. So, I mean, are our fire services, are they seeing increased capital costs?
Well, the cost of capital has gone up exponentially, particularly in the 5 years since the pandemic. It used to be you could buy a new fire engine for $400,000, maybe up to $500,000, let's say like 10 years ago. That same vehicle today is pushing $1 million or more. So that on its face isn't something that you're going to be able to do through fundraisers and things like that. And then on top of that, getting the people in place to staff those apparatus is yet another challenge. Because I think what we've seen with our communities is that a lot of people work outside the communities that they live in, where a few decades ago, there was manufacturers and things like that all over the place that were in the communities and allowed people to leave and go to fires and stuff like that. But when that person's working half an hour or an hour outside the community, that's not realistic anymore.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily that people don't want to volunteer. It might be that it's just not feasible.
Correct. I think that's really one of the drivers. I don't think people are less interested in their community. I think that there's other things that have taken up space in people's lives that are preventing them from being part of a fire department, just as what we see with like the Rotary Clubs and the Lions Clubs and the churches and so on, that there's declining volunteerism. And that's part of a sociological shift that we've had in our country. But that's, you know, in the fire service and EMS, where we've based so much of the response capacity on volunteers, that's where we see a significant impact, because those are sometimes life or death responses that need to be done in a timely manner.
So the survey that was able to outline all the challenges that Wisconsin's fire service is facing, you talked to about 418 fire chiefs around the state, representing more than half of the departments statewide, and they did outline some recommendations, one of which was merging or consolidating fire departments. Now, I imagine that comes with pros and cons.
It's very challenging to do a regionalization for a number of reasons. One is getting the parties to come to agreements and reach consensus on how things would go in a merged department. First, we got to remember that the fire service is a local governmental function. So towns, villages, and cities provide for the service. Now, some of them use like volunteer fire companies. Some of them have their own fire departments and so on. But first and foremost, just getting the municipal leaders together to sit down in a room and come to an agreement can be very challenging on how they want to share services. And then taking those different departments and putting them together, because each one has its own culture. You know, some of them have been in place serving their communities for over 100 years at this point. So there's a lot of those logistical challenges pulling them together. And when you put departments together, the time is because they want to hire full-time staff. So it's not cheaper. So the conventional wisdom says we're going to regionalize and it's going to lower cost. It's not going to lower cost. What it's going to do is prevent the increase from being as much by sharing that cost across several municipalities.
So were there other recommendations that were made that maybe when you did this EMS report, they were able to implement some strategies, anything like that you can see working for the fire side?
After the EMS report came out, the legislature was very responsive to some of the recommendations that were in that report. We saw the shared revenue bill that targeted funding into public safety. So your fire, EMS, law enforcement is what could be used, or a portion of what could be used for that increased funding. You saw the funding assistance program, which was increased from $2.2 million to $25 million, and that's to help buy capital equipment and training for EMS providers. We saw that happened right away 2 years ago. there's currently other legislation right now to help with regionalizations of EMS services and so on. So I think that, you know, from a state government perspective, this has been a nonpartisan issue, and it's been something that once the problem's then been better identified with these studies, has been very responsive for trying to create some statewide solutions. But ultimately, this comes down to local governments prioritizing where funding goes and, you know, how much they want to tax the people to provide the level of service that the people want.
James Small along with us. He's the Rural EMS Program Manager with the Office of Rural Health. The office just released a report that says Wisconsin Fire Service is under significant strain and is struggling to provide essential response capabilities across many communities. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK. Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Trump is again trying to have it both ways on agricultural workers. He says they're working on, quote, a temporary pass where the farmer can have a little control as opposed to you walk in and take everybody away. He's describing feudalism, where the people who work the land are more under direct control of the land owners rather than the rule of law. He wants the vassals. He wants the lords. He wants the peasants.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Donkeys can make great babysitters for sheep. That's next on Farm to Fork. The following is a public service announcement from Farm to Fork. As you're listening to this program, a dramatic paring down of 12 regional centers for agricultural safety and health is taking place. These centers rely on funding support from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, and that agency's budget is being cut by more than 98%. Several of those centers have endorsed my 2025 Public Service Farm Safety and Health campaign, what you're listening to right now. I consider this a loss to the farming community. And while no money is changing hands, a loss to this campaign as well. These centers provide a valuable service to American farmers, their families, and their workers. If you want to make a case for retaining these centers and the services they provide, get in touch with your elected officials in Washington. If enough of you do, there may be a chance to save these services and save the lives and livelihoods of America's farmers. University of Wyoming Extension officials imported donkeys from California to test them as predator deterrents in sheep flocks. Four of those imports were sent to the Laramie Research and Extension Center, where Callie Kepke is sheep unit manager. Kepke says the donkeys needed a little breaking in time.
Eventually, once that donkey figures out she's not going to get away with being naughty, they'll either get right in the middle of the flock and just stay with them. Two of the donkeys, for sure, are basically our lead sheep. So they'll get out in front of the herd, and they'll start taking the herd wherever we need to go.
Kepke says the donkeys can become very attached to the flock.
They don't like being away from their sheep. So when we separate them out in the alleys, close the doors on the barns to work the sheep, they'll sit out there and bray and bray and bray until you finally put sheep back with them, and then they're content.
The donkeys become very protective as well, which is the idea for using them as a replacement for guard dogs. Derek Skasta is director of the Laramie Center.
The big question is, how effective have these donkeys been? We still have had some losses, so it hasn't completely eliminated all deaths, but it comes out to an over 50% reduction in losses.
That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, doing some recombobulating, an extended session with Dan Schaefer, who joins us at 9:30. I hope you can join us.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day, when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Secretary of State Marco Rubio at a Southeast Asian summit in Malaysia, commenting briefly on the talks he's held with China's foreign minister, admitting tariffs are a big part of the conversation these days.
We acknowledged, you know, there are some issues that are going to be, we have to work through, not just beyond trade, but others. But I thought it was a very constructive and positive meeting and gave us a lot to work on.
Back in Washington, hundreds of State Department employees are getting notices they'll be losing their jobs, part of a reorganization of the department. Today, President Trump visits Central Texas, where more than 160 people are still missing from flooding a week ago. A federal judge in New Hampshire has issued a ruling pausing President Trump's executive order ending birthright citizenship from taking effect anywhere in the United States. What it means is that the birthright issue will likely once again end up before the U.S. Supreme Court. Immigration raid at a California farm. Masked agents lining immigrants up against a wall, detaining at least one of them. This is ABC News.